Hi everybody, and a very warm welcome to the Wednesday premiere in a black and white world with David Vance and Alana Mercer. So thank you very much for listening to this, whether you're watching it live, whether you're watching it in replay. We value your time listening to what we're going to chat about. So before we get into the substance of the discussion, just the usual housekeeping we need to do just before we get into this. So wherever you're watching this, and it could be so many places, it could be Odyssey, it could be BitChute, it could be brand YouTube, it could be Facebook, it could be, you could be listening to it on Podbean on our podcast channel, wherever it is, just make sure that you like it and you subscribe to it. Because, we're doing our best to spread our wings and we're trying to focus on those platforms that encourage free speech as opposed to those digital tyrants who don't, who shall remain nameless, but no clues. if you like, our social media links are all down below. You can find them to all the locations. Click, make sure you follow those down there. If you like what we're talking about, if you enjoy our content, please give us the thumbs up. The thumbs up helps the algorithms, and everybody apparently likes that. So thumbs up, that's your work for the next 30 minutes or so. And then if you really want to support us, you can go over to altnewsmedia.net/donate, and there's a little sort of nice little box thing over there, and you can drop, if you want to, a little contribution to help support the work that we're doing. Right. Okay, so without further ado, she's in the green room and she's dressed in green, and now she's coming onto the main screen. Please join me in welcoming Alana Mercer.
Hi, David.
Hi, Alana. Great to see you. And
Lovely to see you.
Yeah. So, hey, listen, it's been, as always, the time flies by so quickly between one week and the next week, Alana. I'm not sure if it's a feature of age or not, but certainly as I grow older, time accelerates. Whereas when I was young, I remember there was all those long summers that seemed to last forever. Don't find those anymore. I'm not sure what's going on. But anyway, nevertheless, 7 days or not, it's great to have you back with us. So what we want to get to, Alana, is we're going to, you produced a really, as is always actually, with most of all your columns, always challenging, always really interesting. Some people find some of the content a bit controversial. Well, so what? That's what challenging thought is all about, isn't it? So I think we wanted to bring up, if we can bring up, with our producer can bring up the article here. And this has caused a little bit of a furore, I think, your side of the pond, Alana. To me, actually, it's relatively innocuous, your argument, it has to be said, but other people didn't think see that. And this relates to the popular conservative pundit Candace Owens appearing on the Tucker Carlson show on Fox. And maybe you could take the story up from that. So she came on and she started to talk. Tell us what she was saying and what you think. Oh, okay. Sorry, and before you do that, When Bloodbath Becomes Bacchanalia, that's an absolutely cracking title. Every week, Alana, you come up with these. That's wordplay of cosmic grade standard. But anyway, yeah, over to you.
It takes an Irishman to appreciate that. Mm. with reference to Oscar Wilde and the likes, great writers. Yeah. David, I don't know why anything I said was controversial. All I did was deconstruct the argument that Miss Owens keeps making on Tucker Carlson's show. And she is brought on to comment about the absolutely unbelievable crime wave that we are seeing in the country. Mm-hmm. And of course, it does have exigent and certain contributing factors, but her main argument always redounds or reduces to the Democrats ate their homework. You know, in other words, the Democrats made me do it, you know, and the same argument. It's interesting. It's an excuse. It's part of the excuse making industry. And this is something that has to be dispelled. A reader wrote to me and said, you are dealing with semantics, but it's exactly the opposite. Wouldn't you say, David, I'm making a substantive argument against reducing the fact of crime, elevated crime across party lines, never mind who's in power, among mm-hmm. certain groups. It's axiomatic, it's a fact. And I feel that the celebrity media, the GOP media, what one of my readers, I always credit my sources, called it.
Yes, you do.
One of these readers said to me, wrote to me on Twitter, and he said, Candy and Captain Kirk are the controlled opposition, the dumbed down opposition. And you know what, the whole circus on television, which is why I try and avoid it, and I don't really care about all those trimmings of fame, etc., is to keep the debate at the duopoly level, you know, at the party level, to make sure that we're discussing, well, if the GOP come, if only we vote Republican, these problems will be solved. And, you know, this is a sort of tit-for-tat argument to keep it at the level of the party. And I think that's what I wanted to dispel. I'm not sure I did that effectively, but you cannot reduce... and in fact, last week you and I discussed another column that I wrote, and you know, it's a theme in my book Into the Cannibals Pot, and of course Charles Murray's seminal work, starting from The Bell Curve to his latest work, you know, is very much of a piece, just speaking about the absolute imperative to discuss and be honest about aggregate group differences in the propensity for crime, lowered inhibitions, athleticism, intellectual achievement, so on and so forth. There are these differences, while at the same time cherishing the individual and treating each and every individual as an individual. So her argument, which I understand it's for TV, it's packaged, it's shallow, very much goes against all those insights.
Yeah, I think that's it. You see, in the salons of the mainstream media, Alana, certain things cannot really be said because it causes discomfort. And what bothers me about, and it's the same in the UK, by the way, you can go on to the main TV channels if you hold back from making observations of the obvious, actually. And that's pretty much what you did, because there was a couple of, as you said, there's been a lot of violence in the States. It seems to be, have sort of exploded in recent times. And I think there was a couple of videos which we're not going to play, but there was something which happened, I think it was Chicago. If we could just bring it up, not to play it, but... This was. I've got to say, Alana, like, I've seen a lot of stuff, but this shocked me. This was the execution of a couple of, I think, Puerto Rican people celebrating Puerto Rican Day.
It was actually a young couple. And we should actually mention their names. That we shouldn't play their awful execution. But it was a Giovanni Arzuga and Yasmin Perez, who were just, you know, they were just having a good time at the Puerto Rican Day parade on Humboldt Park in Chicago, when, you know, a couple of fellows just leapt out of the white car over there and surrounded the couple's car and pulled this young couple out and shot them. But what I described, and which wasn't really described in the mainstream, of course, and neither did... Candace alight on these facts, was the awful glee, the feral, the almost sexual nature, the excitation around the crime, the pants pulled down, the thrust. It was almost like out of how would one say the horror, you know. That's all I can think of.
Well, that's right, and then there was the second event, which I think's also down below. If we scroll down, we'll come to it. Which was it's the same thing. It's one of the substantive points you made. Yeah, this happened in Oakland, didn't it? On June 10th,
California. Yes,
California. Yeah, and again, without show, I don't particularly want to show it, but it's the same thing. It's violence, and it's being celebrated with kind of almost sexual glee. It's really
this was absolutely out and open, sexualized on the scene by the revelers. They were there to partake in a Juneteenth, happening. Juneteenth, it's a new holiday, apparently. I'm not quite sure. Well, you can tell me more about it. But there was the ubiquitous shooting. And as I said, the bloodbath turned to bacchanalia, celebration of sorts. And around the EMT vans, the medical emergency technicians, people surrounded the thing and began simulating sex, if I can say that. I'm not often wordless, although I did describe it. I said about these killing fields across our country, what is so alien is the sexual component, the debauchery and revelry that accompany the violence. Violence appears to be sexually titillating to some lower order reptilian brains, with apologies to reptiles.
You're right, Alana.
How can you watch that and then say the Democrats made them do it?
No, there's actually no connection at all, as far as I can see. Oh. I can understand that in certain cities, and that, for example, Oakland being one, we know in some of these Democrat cities, law and order is a pretty transient concept. So I totally get that. I understand that. But really, that is only the super, you're just skirting at the top of the issue. You're not actually going down into it. And as you say, just because it's a Democrat city and just because law and order may not be as strong as it should be, it doesn't explain those things, Alana. It doesn't explain bumping and grinding. It doesn't explain
it. And it suggests that once a Republican, I think this is what the celebrity media want, is that once a Republican, I'm against politics now. I'm really, because look, we had a Republican presidency, two chambers were Republican, the gubernatorial scene was dominated by Republicans.
Yep.
And last year, under those conditions, was the most violent, the most horrific year that we've known for decades. For MAGA people, for people in the middle, whose businesses were destroyed, and the point about Democrat city versus Republican city, and this is the point I made when the riots, the race riots, the George Floyd riots were ongoing, was that our Constitution says we have natural rights. And yes, we have federalism, but natural rights means the upholding of life, liberty, and property.
Yeah.
So Jenny Durkin has no right to abridge my ability to walk around the city of Seattle without being molested and murdered. Mm-hmm. And if she does not uphold the citizens' natural rights, it was the obligation of the federal government to come in and to restore those rights. But all the federal government did under Republican control was safeguard. Can there be more of a statist argument? Safeguard federal buildings. I don't give a damn about federal buildings.
Yeah.
So the point about changing the guard at DC, in DC, changing our overlords, is immaterial. And this is the argument I object to. The federal government, whether it be Democrat or Republican. So we had that terrible year under a Republican regime, and now it is amplified under the Democrats. The federal government, it is their obligation to uphold natural rights.
Well, that's right, yeah. But you know, in a Democrat city, and this is where I think Candace's argument really is superficial and trite, just because it's a Democrat institution, how does that make me then want to go out and start murdering people? How does it make me want to go out and bump and grind in some sort of farcical sexual act when emergency people are trying to deal with shooting? Actually, Alana, I don't see any connection between what's happening and what Candace Owens was saying.
I mean, look. Law and order are very important points, and those are secondary points to the facts of violence.
Yes.
those differences that we have been discussing. And Charles Murray has once again permitted us, we dissidents, and my book certainly discusses them. But similarly, we have to say that in the East Asian community, specifically Chinese, Japanese, Taiwanese, the crime rate is lower than that of the Caucasian community. And so we have to speak openly about those kind of differences and not reduce them to the party that's in charge. And it's interesting, I was thinking about how this deception parallels the book I wrote about South Africa, Into the Cannibal's Pot, and the very same argument that the controlled opposition, shall we call it, Candace Owens, was advancing during the onslaught of the international community against South Africa, was that apartheid was responsible for black crime. It was the National Party and the apartheid regime that caused the mindset of crime that inflamed, that caused such rage and the detonation of crime. But it's an interesting thing that, and this is, the excuse-making industry, that's the same argument.
Yeah.
Apartheid made them do it. The National Party, which was the party of apartheid. But it's very interesting to note that under apartheid, obviously we don't condone that, we don't approve apartheid, crime rate was much, much lower. And the difference, of course, was those who perpetrated capital crimes were very, very likely to be caught. Now it's 8% likelihood of catching a murderer. And I do describe in this connection, in dealing with the excuse-making arguments in Into the Cannibal's Pot, which I wrote in 2011, was that there was a case, and I give an example there, where now nobody's brought a book, and so crime is out of control. But crime was always there, except that under the apartheid regime, it was very much dealt with in a Western manner. And in fact, Keith Richburg, who's an African-American writer, and I quote him extensively, he has wonderful descriptions in his book about how, in countries where the streets are slick with blood, you have white men in police cars arrive on the scene, put up the yellow tape, get out with their ruddy complexions and start doing forensic work. And he, as an African-American, was used to that sort of scene in what was a first world America. And he found that so unbelievable, or laudable. He was actually lauding it about South Africa. The people came and they did the forensic and they did the punishment. And one of the cases that I bring out against the excuse-making industry is, I think it's probably the late 80s or 90s in Natal, Lowlands Farm, there was a couple, we didn't have many farm murders under apartheid, you understand, and there was a couple that was murdered very much in the style of what we see today, farm murders, the Lows, the Lows. And indeed, those typical vans came and did the forensic work and went door to door all over the farm and the villages adjacent. And they got the culprits. And what they did was, of course, the culprits went to the gallows. We had people swung in those days. Yep. What they used to do then, they would bring the whole family. It sounds terribly merciless, but they would bring the entire family, the entire tribe, to Pretoria, front row seats to the execution. After that, years elapsed before such a crime was committed again. So the act of prosecuting the crime, as well as making people see the consequences of crime directly by, they actually brought the family to see the execution, had impact. But crime was always a reality, whether it be the British before the National Party or the National Party, and now it is out of control. So, and we don't have apartheid. So the excuse-making industry under democracy, there's never been a more violent country. Mind you, we are beginning to compete, and Central Latin America.
We are. Yeah, you know, you absolutely are. But when you see those kind of incidents, Alana, that, you know, those videos that we've talked about, and you see that, and that is by no means, it's not really that exceptional in America now. We see it more and more and more. And actually, we don't see anything like that, I think, in Europe, basically. We're not seeing...
What do you think?
Well, that's a really good question. It's an extremely good question. We just don't see that. We don't see these street executions. We don't see this sexualization of violence that we saw there in Oakland. We don't see that. I'm not sure why that exactly is. Is law and order more upheld in here? Yeah, maybe it is a bit.
I think the island that is Britain or United Kingdom is well, when I watch BBC, maybe that's just me sharing a feeling I get. It's very distinct. It has a very distinct culture. And I noticed that the multicultural communities have quite assimilated that culture. They speak the same dialect as you do. It's interesting to people working from watching from the outside.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe there's more of a the accents are the same, the dialects are the same, the references, the cultural references, there's none of this us versus them, less of it. And to the extent you're getting it from the United States. The reason why immigration is so destructive here, because we acculturate our immigrants to a militant identity politics, which is now shifted to anti-white politics.
Yes.
So I noticed an outsider, the British, whether it be in, you're quite culturally distinct, and everyone seems to be on the same page culturally.
I think broadly speaking, that would be correct. I think in certain areas, I could take you to certain parts of London and other northern England cities where, let's say, the multiculturalism has resulted in, rather than cities coming together, we see division, which is not a good thing. But Alana, it's not on the scale of the US. The US is so, it's like on warp speed, as far as I can see, into this sort of this incredible violence and cultures who do not seem to want to, sort of work together in any way. And see, this is where I think, and we've talked about this, the South Africa angle, but there's actually a Northern Irish angle, which I would just want to bring up. And that is, you mentioned about the fact that, you know, the reason that there had to be the violence was because of apartheid. Well, we had decades of terrorism and thousands of people blown to pieces and shot and all of that. And, well, the reason for that was, because we had a majoritarian government. Well, let me tell you, it wasn't majoritarian governments, that concept that made some people, some terrorist people, go out and plant bombs, you know, in babies' prams and shoot fathers and mums in the head. It wasn't that that did that. So, you know, I feel a very strong connection to your experience. Yes.
And to the argument.
The argument, exactly. Yeah, that's why I relate to it.
And, you know, it's so alien to conservatives to blame, you know, we believe in agency, in individual responsibility, in self-determinism. And it's so alien. And so that's why it's so politically cynical, really, and dishonest to blame, to reduce crime or to reduce individual behavior to the level of party, the duopoly, because as conservative minded people, me, libertarian conservative and you, paleo conservative, we believe in the individual agency. And human action is a function of individuals acting together. And that's what the social science shows us. Certain individuals acting together account for a hell of a lot of crime. Never mind the party in power. We need to acknowledge that. Certainly, law and order helps, but you cannot the same in Ireland. So, what makes for the improvement now in Ireland?
Well, you know, that would be a program in itself. But I mean, perhaps One of the things that we did, which I profoundly disagreed with, and I wrote a book about it, is installing the people who were carrying out the violence. We put them into government. And that,
like the ANC.
Just the same, exactly the same. And therefore, once you do that, the violence goes down a tier because it's achieved what it was trying to achieve.
You know what happens then? At least the ANC begins plundering rather than just waging revolutionary war. There's state capture and corruption and plundering to do. So it's not governance, but it's, you know, the state plundering.
No, absolutely right. Yeah, but you're right. I mean, human agency is the issue here, and that's what Candace Owens is actually denying, and to a significant degree, anyway. And that's why I think that what you wrote was actually spot on. And I find it hard to believe that intelligent people like Tucker Carlson and others don't see through that, or maybe they do, Alana. Do you think? But it's just wouldn't be polite.
He has to have, he's obligated to have certain guests on, and he's a very smart gentleman. I'm sure he sees through that. I wouldn't put anything past Tucker, and he's witching hour, as I call it. He's quite a magician. But of course, we have to recognize when the people who attack me, you and I are not in the business of celebrity media. We do what we do, but we're not for the money, which we don't get or have.
Don't care.
We do it for the truth, for what we see as the truth. Now, these people are in a business and they have to perpetuate a certain constituency. They have to, as Jack Kerouac points out in his work, they have to keep the circus going to keep the whole media industrial complex profitable, you know. So you have to have certain guests on. I don't think that Tucker is quite at that argument that you and I are making, but certainly all the books from conservative African-American conservatives has to do with being on a plantation, on the Democratic plantation, get off the Democratic plantation, vote GOP, everything will be fine. That's the sum total of the argument. I'm sure Tucker sees through that, and I'm not prepared to pay lip service to that. Just as in September 19, 2002, I was not prepared to go along. You know, I also came on the scene like Candace, a charming lady, came on the scene, a little bit older than her, and I was syndicated straight out of Canada. I mean, in 6 weeks, I was syndicated. That fell through on September 19, 2002, when I was absolutely refused to go along with the as obscene Bush war. So that's when I became persona non grata. So we made choices. You and I have made choices to follow the truth rather than the celebrity media. But that's it.
But I don't think Candace Owens, I mean, she talks about the American black community, but she's not really helping, is she? I don't see how she's helping, because by ignoring that there is an issue there and by shifting it onto Democrat politicians and the whole of the rest of that whole circus argument, then that means that the fundamental issues can't really be, certainly in polite mainstream media circles, ever really discussed, let alone resolved.
It's interesting. You actually, with your comment, you always make me think, but maybe she's a little like J.D. Vance. Have you seen him? He's...
my namesake, yeah.
He wrote a book called Hillbilly Elegy, and of course it's the toast of the town because he takes down the hillbilly, the Appalachian, the dirt poor white people. He takes them down and made quite a lot of money over that. And I think he's even a candidate now he's going to be a candidate for the Republican Party. But I've read, and I wrote a column about that, which was taken down, which I didn't run widely, but it was even taken down by a news outlet. I think people are very into the GOP hierarchy is into J.D. Vance. And a lot of the critique came from poor Southern people who said, I switch off the television. My Aunt Ruth switches off the television when he starts degrading us to make himself look better. So I don't know if it's the same sort of thing. I don't know.
There's a bit of a resonance there, Alana, between those two circumstances. But ultimately, I guess some people will seek a self-aggrandizement through media circles. And if that means that they have to just, ameliorate arguments a little bit and avoid real substance that might be a little bit incendiary, they'll do it. You don't. Yeah. I won't.
No, and once again, you say self-aggrandizement, which prompts me to read you this part of the column, which, Ms. Owens often says, I'll spell it out for everybody clearly and plainly because nobody's saying this. She always qualifies this. And, she's a young lady and she's sitting in the company of very smart people who've said it again and again 30 years ago. What I said is, after all, when she and Charlie Kirk, and you're not supposed to, I write in the English tradition, a strident, witty, power punches. So she and Charlie Kirk spoke for Brexit in London circa 2018, and they dubbed their visit the most important, I quote, the most important philosophical arrival to Europe since Thomas Jefferson arrived in Paris. And I qualified that was Charlie Kirk, not Russell Kirk. And my editor at WorldNet Daily was on the floor. Because Russell Kirk, of course, was the founder of conservatism and a profound, brilliant thinker. Mm-hmm. And right.
Yeah. But again, the fact that they saw themselves, woo! And of course, I can assure you that they made a zero impact on a Brexit.
Oh, you would utterly, know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, totally relevant. I think they tried to set up like Turning Point. I think was that an organization they were connected with? They tried to set up a Turning Point UK organization. Came to nothing. That was a little. I think self-promotion tour back in 2008. Nobody knew who they were when they came.
But this is the arrogance. That's interesting. I want to hear more about it. But that's the arrogance often of our exceptionalism, our ability. We override local activism. And this is what I've made. It's the same point I've made in South Africa. When I see young Afrikaners activists there, I want them to speak for them, not me. I stand back, but I actually am a South African. I know about apartheid. I communicated with P.W. Botha's second wife. I'm part of that fabric, so I have more of a right to speak up. But when I see Americans go there and speak about farm murders authoritatively or English, I love to see the locals. And that's the thing. Candace and Charlie Kirk, not Russell Kirk, went to England without any awareness of local activism, which is being suppressed. Who's that gentleman, Tommy?
Robinson. Tommy Robinson.
Wonderful man. Is he out of jail?
Yeah, no, he isn't in jail, but he's, Alana, he is hounded, he is deplatformed, I will be surprised if he doesn't end up in prison at some point, because that's unfortunately, we do, that's one of the problems we do have in the UK, that people like Tommy Robinson are persecuted. Whereas, but happily, no one knows who Candace Owens really is over here. Don't think they ever will. So long story short, that visit, they could have saved themselves saved all those carbon emissions and not bothered coming to this side of the Atlantic.
But yeah, listen.
Alana, we have come. I'm afraid the clock has ticked, and as always, it catches us out, but I have to be strict in this one here. So what I have to say is, listen, thank you for coming onto the show. Thanks for sharing your thoughts. It's really interesting, and I do recommend, obviously, everyone, the link to Alana's column is down below. If you haven't read it, do read it. Just absorb the substance. When Alana and I get together, we want to talk about substance, not trivialities, not superficial nonsense. And sometimes it's hard to do, you know, but we are creating space here. And yes. I suppose, Alana, just to
and
finish.
And I so appreciate that, David, about you, yeah. your intellectual curiosity or your lack of, you're not threatened by any ideas or any leprechaun in green. And it's just a pleasure for me to relax and talk.
Yeah, well, it's the pleasure is also ours. So look, kind of thank you for coming on the show. Great to see you. Thanks everybody for watching this. Do drop your comments below on whichever platform you happen to be watching this on, and we'll catch up with you this time next week. Thanks again for your time. Bye everybody.